What's up, y'all? This is Jeff Durbin with Apologia Radio at apologiaradio.com. Want to talk to you guys about an amazing connection that we have right now with Whitfield Theological Seminary. I want you to run over to whitfield.edu, whitfield.edu, whitefield.edu. I want you to check out the programs they have. They have undergraduate programs at Whitfield College, and they also have Whitfield Theological Seminary for the graduate degree and above and beyond. I think you'll really be impressed with the rigorous nature of the classes, the consistent biblical worldview taught and adhered to. I want you to contact Whitfield Theological Seminary at whitfield.edu. Get a hold of our friend, Dr. Kenneth Talbot, and start your classes today. ApologiaRadio.com.
Non-rock a boatus must stop. I don't want to rock the boat. I want to sink it.
Are you going to bark all day, little doggy, or are you going to bite?
Delusional is okay in your worldview. I'm an animal. You don't chastise chickens for being delusional. You don't chastise pigs for being delusional. So you calling me delusional using your worldview is perfectly okay. It doesn't really hurt.
She hung up on me.
What?
Desperate times call for faithful men and not for careful men. The careful men come later and write the biographies of the faithful men, lauding them for their courage.
Go into all the world and make disciples. Not go into the world and make buddies. Not to make broses.
Right.
Don't go into the world and make homies.
Right.
Disciples.
I got a bit of a jiggle neck. That's a joke, Pastor.
No. When we have the real message of truth, we cannot let somebody say they're speaking truth when they're not.
What's up, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of Apologia Radio. This is Jeff Durbin, 1360 KPXQ, Faith Talk, baby. Woo-woo. So what's up, y'all? Did you miss us? Did you miss me, Joy, Luke? Sorry last night, but...
Are you asking me or are you asking our listeners?
I'm, you know, just kind of just chit-chatting.
He just wants to be missed.
That's the bear. That's the girl over there. Yep. What's up, y'all?
Hi.
Another week, and guess what Joy is doing?
In her defense, she was looking at Facebook. I saw her.
Do I know?
I was just looking. I was reading a thing. It had nothing to do with animals. Like, not at all. There's no pictures. Not the word animal.
Do you have any exciting stories for us from when you were in Chicago? Did anything really cool happen? Because I know we mentioned you were there, and we talked about, like, you making out with animals and all that stuff. But we didn't mention, like what happened. Was anything good? Any good stories? Any exciting adventures on the road?
I know you ate some good food.
We did. The only real, like, non-dessert food I ate the whole time was deep dish pizza. And then other than that, I pretty much just ate Gobert's homemade apple cider donuts.
Did you bring me any back, though?
No.
Ben better have some for me.
He brought back a bunch of stuff.
Or I'm going to punch him in the face.
Our friend Ben, his family owns a farm.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool farm.
Him. Yep.
Did you jump on any, like, jumpy things? Like,
oh, yeah,
pillows?
The bouncing pillow.
Did you do that?
That's, like, my favorite part.
And they have giraffes, and he has leopards and
leopards. Tigers.
They have little leopards in a cage. People just like sitting there, like, look at the leopards, mommy, and like, oh, don't touch them,
don't touch them, don't get near them,
unclean. Did you have any sausage?
No.
Sausage. Turkey.
Sausage. No meat.
Sausage.
So, guys, you get us at ApologiaRadio.com, guys. Every week, new episode uploads. If you don't have the church app, go to Google Play Store or the iTunes Store and get the app, Apologia Church app. You can get all the past sermons. You get lectures on there, our Renew Bible study, and at the same time, you get all the Apologia Radio episodes uploaded. I encourage you guys, go check out our YouTube channel as well, Apologia Church on YouTube, and you can check out the sermon just delivered at Apologia Church and at the Herald Society, and that is the Sermon on the Gospel of the Kingdom. It's at our Apologia Church YouTube channel right now, so I encourage you guys to check that out. Really, I think, for me, an important sermon. And Let's talk about some. Before we get into this show today, we're going to talk about atheism today and feminism. What? We've never done that before, have we? Mm-hmm. Atheism and feminism. Not sure we've actually combined the two of those things, although they seem to go hand in hand in our culture.
Yeah.
Interestingly. Although not so interestingly. And in the same respect. But we're going to talk about atheism and feminism. Before we do, I wanted to just bring this up because we should talk a lot about this as it happens. By the way, my sons are in the studio today. Say hi, Turtle.
Hi.
You got to say it real loud. Say hello.
Hi.
That's Turtle. His name is Stella. We're
calling
Turtle.
I noticed that you didn't invite your daughters. I feel like that's sort of
sexist.
I feel like there's some discrimination going on here.
No, it's called lazy, is what that is. That's what that is. Lazy. There's my daughter, Sailor, is 9, and then I got a 14-year-old now. Man, I'm like an old...
14.
I'm like an old man.
A 14-year-old.
I'm like an old man. And I got my 15-year-old son right here. This is Sage. Sage, say hi. Grab that. Say hello.
Hi.
That's Sage.
Hello.
So if you guys can watch, you guys can listen to the progression on Apology Radio. If you listen to Sage visited like 2 years ago or 3 years ago, he's like, hi. Hello, I'm Sage. Hi.
I'm Sage. Hi.
And he comes out now, he's like, yeah, what's up, baby? Yeah, how you doing?
Dope.
Hey, it's dope. What's up, dope, baby? Thanks for having me back.
So I'm just curious, did the fire alarm drill that we just had to do, did that inspire this music?
I think so. I'm just trying to get some upbeat music. Okay,
some kind of
let's talk about Star Wars for a second. Episode 7, my son Sage is a huge Star Wars fan. I think Turtle is a Star Wars fan, too. We're huge Star Wars fans. So here's the deal. Anthony Daniels, the voice of C-3PO and one of the Star Wars alumni, who will be returning to Star Wars Episode 7 next year, recently took to social media to express his excitement for the upcoming film, claiming it might just be superior to original prequel Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. That is a bold statement. Bold statement. So, it was a tweet that he shared. Now, he's giving a quotation here of somebody saying something. No movie sequel is better than The Empire Strikes Back. And he says, this is C-3PO, the original C-3PO, mind you. He says, you might eat those words for Christmas dinner in 2015. Joy and indigestion to the world. What?
What?
There's some bold claims.
Oh, yeah.
And did you know this, Sage? Did you know that there's talk about the fact that by this Christmas, they're going to have a commercial for the new Star Wars? Did you hear that? Yeah, you can use the microphone. Yeah. They can't see you. They can't hear your nod.
Is it going to be a picture of an old man breaking his leg? The video is going to be.
Yeah. Harrison Ford. It's just him. Dope. Ouch. Okay, so Sage, you can talk in the microphone. What's your favorite episode of Star Wars? Episode what? Jar Jar Binks. That's your favorite.
Oh gosh. Oh.
He's the worst. 6 and 3.
6 and 3?
Yeah.
You like the prequels? The number 3?
No, I don't like any of the prequels, but I like 3 though. I don't know why.
I don't like any of them, but I do like 1. Just none of them. But
I like one of them.
You tried to trick me.
like just awful. I was ashamed of the first 3 Star Wars. I mean, the new first 3 prequel. Yeah.
You just have to ignore his acting.
Yeah.
Have to ignore everything.
Yeah, the whole film. Just the special effects. And go, ooh.
Just
the
North Sage.
Yeah.
Just sort of like glean some things about the story so that you can successfully watch.
Yes.
The first 3/last 3.
Okay. So, your favorite Star Wars, Mr. Bear?
Probably Empire Strikes Back.
You think so?
Although I am in the minority. I actually like the first 3, so I don't hate on me here. I don't want to get booed out of the studio, but...
I enjoyed it. Did you enjoy Jar Jar Binks?
I actually did like Jar Jar Binks.
Oh, my God.
I know I'm in the minority.
Stop.
Don't kill me for it. I agree. I admit he got annoying after a little while, but I didn't like...
Evie probably liked him.
She actually hasn't seen that one.
Oh, really?
That's the only one she hasn't seen because nobody has a copy of it for me to borrow because everybody hates it.
All right, listeners. Listeners, the one who engages with us. Well, go to Apologia Radio and let us know what your favorite Star Wars episode was. And why. That'd be good.
What's your favorite?
My favorite? Probably Return of the Jedi. Because that's, I think, when I was old enough to really, really love Star Wars. And that came out. And I was already been playing with the toys forever. And this is like the final, you know, the consummation, the end of the story, you know. Although now, not so much the end of the story. Because it's just continuing on with decrepit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think this will be a lot better.
Do you think Luke's just going to be tired in this one? Like, he's just old. He's just tired. He's like, I'll never join that. All right.
Okay, fine. I'll do it.
Okay.
I thought you were talking about me. I was like, what?
White Sabers are real.
What's that?
You realize that White Sabers aren't real?
Yeah. They're real. Someday they'll be real. Do you know that one day we will invent lightsabers?
Well, I'm only going to get one.
And then the government will have to regulate
Turtle
them.
Said, I'm only going to get one.
Just one.
Did you know that the Schwartz is wheel? It's a wheel.
He's rubbing off on you.
Yeah, I didn't. Thanks, Turtle. The Schwartz.
I want it green.
Let you the Schwartz green? Be with you.
The Schwartz be with you.
What I was trying to say.
You're going to get green?
Yeah.
Why green? Because it's a good guy color?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want red like a bad guy?
No.
Sidney Sage is the opposite. He'd be like, I'll pick red.
I'll just be Darth Vader.
You'll be Darth Vader?
Mm. Turtle, you're going to get a pink one. Don't lie.
No, I'm not. Those are
with
the
glitter in it. Glitter lightsabers.
He said those are the worst lightsabers ever. The pink ones.
You're going to get one that's, yeah, anyways, polka dot.
All right, so if you haven't, I'm going to encourage you guys to do something. We have a whole big show planned for you guys today. We're going to deal with, again, atheism. We're going to deal with an article that was written in response to our show, took aim at the show. And I normally would ignore stuff coming from this atheist because we've handled so much before of what he's put out. And he's just gotten so much wrong in the past. It just becomes difficult in my mind to spend a lot more time on it because we've spent time on it before. And I really feel like we've shown a lot of graciousness to him, and there's been so many mistakes made in the past and, you know, corrections made to things that he won't identify, and just a lot of stuff that I just don't necessarily trust with this atheist. Name changes, erasing old accounts, like different identity kind of stuff going on. But I talked to Luke and Joy about this. I thought that this would actually be good because it's a great moment, I think, to identify something that Dr. White has said in the past. Have you guys ever heard Dr. White say this? I think he said it pretty often. I'm pretty sure Dr. White has said this, that it seems to be, it seems that being an atheist dramatically decreases your ability to actually read the Bible in context. Mm-hmm. Like somehow being an atheist really impacts your ability to actually read the Bible.
Yeah.
Atheists seem to be very critical in areas that are not related to scripture. So, for example, if you were to ask an atheist about some historical event or something in philosophy or ask a large question, they would typically do what's normative and say, well, what's the context? What was the background? Who said it? Who was listening? What was the belief of the day? You know, they would ask all kinds of questions surrounding, like, well, I don't know. Give me the details. I want to know, like, I want to really understand what was said, what was meant by it. But it seems to me that when you have an atheist really start to address issues that really pertain to them or the culture, and they will handle the Bible in a way they will not handle any other historical documents or any work of philosophy or anything. Mm-hmm. They'll often try to do the critical thinking when it comes to anything else except for Scripture. And we know why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're at war with God. And so this is the voice of your Creator, and so you're going to distort it and twist the message. But I thought this article was an awesome opportunity for us to display what is common in atheistic screeds, and that is a lack of concern for accuracy.
Right.
Integrity.
Right.
Honesty and handling these sorts of things.
Yeah.
So that'd be a good show to do. So let's stay with us, guys. Apologia Radio, Atheism and Feminism. Be right back, guys. ApologiaRadio.com.
Apologia Radio will be right back.
Apologia Radio, let's join the girl, Luke the Bear. I got my boys in the studio today.
My boys?
My boys.
My boys, though.
My boys, though. Literally. Stellar and Sage, and let's get right into it. Last week's episode was on the Potty Mouth Princess, and Justin, a really, I think, important show to do. We haven't done a lot of shows on feminism and really the beauty of the biblical worldview in identifying the value and dignity and worth of male and female, highlighting the equal status and value of male-female relationships. Not denying, of course, Christians don't deny the difference in role and function that God creates individuals for, but the uniqueness of male and female relationship and the uniqueness of male and female in the image of God. We've never actually done that, but we did a show on the Potty Mouth Princess. It was last week. Go check it out at apologiaradio.com. Something came my way yesterday, and it was on the Blaze, and I just want to just give you a heads up on it. And this organization is called FCKH8. It spells Flick. Flick Hate?
Yeah.
Flick Hot 8.
That's what I like to do.
Not, yeah, just...
Flick it away.
Flick, and that's mean. Flick. Flick Hate is the organization, and... this is what a feminist looks like. They have been a major organization donating to the gay agenda, and so that's what it has been in the past, but they're also heavily into the feminist movement, and they are the ones that put out the Potty Mouth Princess commercial. But it, as it turns out, I'll read this from the Blaze, the This Is What a Feminist Looks Like t-shirt gained widespread attention last week after British politicians and celebrities started donning the tops. And it says, but as the British Daily Mail reported, it turns out the pricey garments come from a seemingly unfeminist environment, a sweatshop on the island of Mauritius, where women making the shirts sleep 16 to a room and earn roughly $1 per hour. Oh, it's crazy. Okay, the shirts are a product of fashion retailer Whistles, which sells its shirts for 45 euro, roughly $72 each. And according to the Daily Mail, the factory where the shirts are produced is owned by some textile company, which pays workers 6,000 rupees or less than $200. Sage assumes we're not doing a radio show right now. Or less than $200 per month, about one-fourth of the Mauritius average rate wage. My mouth is not working today. The workers in this factory are treated very poorly, and the fact that politicians in England are making a statement using these sweatshop T-shirts is appalling, said Faizai Ali Begun, president of the International Textile, Garment and Leather Workers Union. A whistle spokesperson told the Daily Mail it places a high priority on environmental, social, and ethical issues. The allegations regarding the production of T-shirts in the CMT factory are extremely serious, and we are investigating them as a matter of urgency. So I just thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, slightly.
It's slightly interesting that this movement that is supposedly all about... women's equal rights and all the rest is having these T-shirts.
As long as the men are also being paid $1 a day.
Yeah.
I guess it's okay.
Well, apparently.
Did they hire men there?
I don't know. It doesn't say. Just I thought that was a powerful identification of a problem with this movement. And so let's do a little discussion here. You know... One of the things that we constantly stress on this show is consistency. Our friend and one of my heroes of the faith, Dr. James White, says inconsistency is the sign of a failed argument. Mm-hmm. Inconsistency is a sign of a failed argument. And that's just a really powerful statement. Inconsistency is a sign of a failed argument. Now, we have to think about those things because here's the deal. Recognizing... in the image of God, we have emotions that come intact with us. And so we're emotional creatures, and we should be emotional creatures. For example, when an atheist brings up an argument about how could you believe in God when you walk through the cancer ward of a children's hospital, that is immediately a painful thought for the Christian, right? Why? Because we have a right to those things because we're in the image of God. We have the worldview that can make sense of value and worth for these children and cancer being not good.
Right.
Right. And so when the atheist brings up the challenge, like Dan Barker often does, he says, you know, how could you believe in God and you walk through the cancer ward of a children's hospital? It immediately strikes the Christian as, oh, it's painful. It's a difficult question to answer because that child has so much meaning and cancer is bad. Right. But, you know, we have to think through consistency. It's inconsistent for the atheist, Dan Barker, who's been on the show with me before, and Cy, it's inconsistent for in his position to bring up the challenge of the cancer ward and the children. Why? Because in his view, human beings are nothing more than stardust.
Yep.
Human beings have no ultimate value, meaning, or worth. Human beings live, they die, and they're gone. They're just a product of a biological evolutionary process that did not have them in mind at all. Human beings are nothing more than ants on an anthill, ultimately. And so it's inconsistent for him. For the Christian, these are things that are important for us to work out, and we want to work them out because truth matters to us. People matter to us because we have what? The biblical worldview. We're standing on God's revelation. Now, we constantly stress all the time that neutrality is a myth. Now, Bonson always said that, and so did Van Til, and so do I. Neutrality is a myth. And here's the cool thing. Secular philosophers and professors in secular universities also recognize this. The neutrality is a myth. It's all about worldviews. When I was at Scottsdale Community College last year speaking to the group of students there on the irrefutable proof of God, I think is what the title of the message was that I gave to them. One of the things that really struck me is the professor there was not a Christian. However, he's not a Christian. He recognized the importance of worldviews that in epistemology that you bring to every single discussion. Mm-hmm. When I start talking about worldviews and how everyone has a worldview and no one's neutral, and that's what you bring to the discussion always. No fact is a brute fact. It's always interpreted by everybody, Christian and atheist alike. He's just like his head almost came off his shoulders. He's nodding up and down. That's right. It's a worldview issue. And so when we discuss the issues that arise in Christian-atheist dialogue, you have to recognize that the atheist is coming with a foundation that he's standing on as he talks.
Right.
Now, so is the Christian. Let's pretend we're neutral here. Nobody is.
Right.
Nobody is. The critics of Apologia Radio, who are atheists, are not neutral.
Not at all.
They are fiery. Fiery. And at war with God and his word. They're not neutral. They have a position, a worldview, a lens through which they're viewing all these things, and that's how they're coming at it. They have an ultimate standard and ultimate authority, which ultimately is them and their own human autonomous reasoning. Now, for the Christian, granted, we say the same thing. We have an ultimate standard. It's Jesus Christ. If you're not with him, you're against him. He is the source of all wisdom and knowledge, and if you don't start with him, you can't know anything, and you are reduced to absurdity and foolishness and all the rest. We recognize that. And here's the deal. I'm going to say this as we go into the next segment. If God in the Bible did not, this is something I was talking to Sage about yesterday, if he did not make the claims that he makes, if you're not with me, you're against me, he's the source of all knowledge, and if you don't start with him, you're a fool, if he didn't make those claims, you'd have every reason to disbelieve him, because an ultimate standard is just that, ultimate, and he appeals to no one above him or below him, and anything he appealed to outside of himself to buttress his own authority would in fact then be the God he's appealing to, and that would not be God. Everyone has an ultimate. Be right back.
Apologia Radio will be right back.
Haven't heard that in a long time, dude. All right, chums, let's do this. Leroy Jenkins. You know that, Joy? One of my favorite things ever. That's like when the internet was really getting good with like stupidvideo.com. Did you ever go to stupidvideo.com? Oh my gosh, you're such a child.
You almost said you're so stupid for not going to stupid.
You did.
No, I didn't.
Because no, you didn't.
Is it because I'm a woman?
No, I didn't.
Hey, J-Man, you know what I'm talking about, right? Stupid video.
I don't either. I'm so sorry.
Oh!
I never went
children.
There
Dang. Children. This is like when the internet got really, really good. Everybody that knows right now, they're like, oh, yeah, Jeff, I know. That's when like the internet was like big time.
No, I didn't.
Listen, you didn't go to YouTube to get like the good video stuff. You went to stupid video. And every video started with stupid video and boom. Awesome. Okay. Awesome. All right.
Sorry,
so
old man.
Let's do some origins. Let's do some origin stuff. This is Dawkins talking about origins, and you have to keep this in mind. When we talk with atheists, whom we love, we have to begin the discussion understanding there's no neutrality. Everybody has a view of an epistemology. They have a metaphysic. They have a view of, you know, they have a view of even origins. They have a view of ethics, how you should live your life. So this is Dawkins, well-known, respected atheist, and this is his question period at an event. Somebody asking him about evolution from bacteria to apes. You know, oftentimes I'll say to atheists, you know, you believe that we are apes or our ancestors are bacteria. Here we go.
Let's go to this lady over here. Thank you.
It's fairly easy to imagine how apes can develop into humans, but I don't find it as easy to imagine how bacteria can develop into apes. Could you describe some of the species in between?
Yes. Yeah. The question says it's easy to imagine how apes could it could evolve into humans, but it's harder to imagine how bacteria could evolve into apes. Well, one very important difference is that the time it took for apes to change into humans is a matter of perhaps 5 million years, whereas the time it took for bacteria to evolve into apes was a matter of thousands of millions of years. So it is a huge difference. And what the human imagination is capable of visualizing gets more and more difficult the longer the time span is that you have.
Yes, imagination is a huge factor in that whole discussion. Mm-hmm. But so when I suggest to the atheist that I talk to often and I say, listen, we need to start with what your view is of me and you as we engage this rational discussion, for me, it makes sense. I believe that I have to have integrity, that I am morally obligated outside of my own self to treat you with respect and love and dignity. If I sin against you, I should ask for your forgiveness. I have to be honest in discussion. I can't bring in false evidence as false witness because that would in fact be a lie. I have to you know, love truth, and I have to love you. You're in the image of the same God as me. All those things play into my discussion with the atheist. But if you think about the atheist and his view of origins, he believes that at some point in time, way back, that his ancestors were bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Yes, the atheist believes. Yes, they do. This is so funny when you say it, when I say, you know, atheists believe we've evolved from bacteria, that our ancestors were fish and we came from fish to philosophers. You know, like, oh, that's just a cute thing Jeff is doing. No, that's not cute. I'm trying to accurately represent the atheistic system.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they believe. They believe that through some magical reconfiguration, inorganic matter became organic.
Mm-hmm.
That you had bacteria that we moved from, and I'm going to miss some gaps here, but we moved from bacteria to fish to apes to people. And Christians are the ones that believe in fairy tales,
mm-hmm.
right? It's an amazing thing. And so here's a person in front of you complaining about what the Bible says. When they're complaining about what the Bible teaches, right? Usually stripping it out of its context, not allowing God to speak, you know, as a whole. But this is a person in front of you who believes that there's no ultimate meaning or purpose in the universe, that they are the accidents of a universe that did not have them in mind, and that their ancestors were bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a question that I often ask the atheists. What obligation does the descendant of bacteria have to another accidental descendant of bacteria?
Mm-hmm.
What obligation at all?
Right.
In the sense of integrity and discussion? In the sense of bringing in evidence, caring about truth, being obligated to treat the person in front of you with dignity and mm-hmm. respect? Now, you might say as an atheist, well, I really want to be treated with respect, and I'd like to treat you with respect. And to that, I'd say, that's just the image of God.
Yep.
Rising up inside of you. It's the inescapable part of your life living in God's world. You can't help but being what God has created you to be in his world. But the atheist will contradict his belief system at every turn in the discussion. Be right back with more clips. I think you'll be really excited about what you hear next, guys. ApologiaRadio.com.
Apologia Radio will be right back.
I am not your father. You are listening to Apologia Radio. Here are your hosts, Luke Bearwalker.
I'll never turn to the dark side.
J2D2. And J3TO.
Use the comm link. Oh my.
That's my favorite comeback.
I still can't believe that's Matt.
No, we gotta get a new one made. We got Matt, have Matt make us a new one. Like, update it for episode 7.
There's a lot of things we need Matt to do.
We do. We do. All right, guys, Apologia Radio back with a discussion about atheism and feminism. We got 2 hours here on the show, so we're going to try to lay down a few foundational things as we move into the discussion. Let's talk about Krauss. We have to start with origins here, and what is the bottom line belief of the atheist? Now, here's the deal. When you are in discussion with an atheist in front of you, recognize something, that he's in the image of God or she's in the image of God. They deserve, because of who they are in God's image, our love, our respect. They are valuable. They have dignity. They're at war with God. You can take a coin, you can take, what's that sound? Is that you? Okay. You can take with an image on it and you can throw it into the mud. Okay. A coin with an image on it, you can throw it into the mud. It hasn't erased the image on the coin. It might be marred. It could be dirty, but the image is still there. The atheist in front of you who's at war with God, who's suppressing the truth and unrighteousness, is still image of God and is worthy of our love and our respect. And that's important, because guess what the atheist cannot ultimately say with any real objective standard is the same about us with their position. Mm-hmm. See, I can say that as a Christian. You are worthy of my respect and my love. I'm obligated beyond my own preference to love you and care for you. Mm-hmm. And I'm morally obligated to do good to you and to be truthful and all the rest. The atheist can't say that. Now, they want those things.
Yeah.
Because they're image of God. So that, and that just shows the internal conflict in their system as they even discuss with you. But this is Lawrence Krauss and why our godless universe is so precious. It's a clip we've played before, but I think it's important to lay down, and I think you need to hear it, because this is the bottom line of atheism. Of course, as usual, there had to be an Acura commercial that comes up before the YouTube video. But anyway, this is Lawrence Krauss. Lawrence Krauss is the one who wrote the book, Universe from Nothing. And I think the subtitle is How We've Got Something from Nothing or something like that. He actually believes in the universe from nothing. And the physical constants in the universe came about by accident.
The science presents to us is in some sense uncomfortable. Because what we've learned is that we are more insignificant than we ever could have imagined. You could get rid of us and all the galaxies and everything we see in the universe, and it would be largely the same. So we're insignificant on a scale that Copernicus never would have imagined. And in addition, it turns out the future is miserable. So the two lessons that I like to give is, first, we're insignificant, and second, the future is miserable. Now, that you might think that should depress you, but I would argue that, in fact, it should embolden you and provide you a different kind of consolation. Because if the universe doesn't care about us, and if we're an accident in a remote corner of the universe, in some sense, it makes us more precious.
I love to play that, yeah. Because here's what I love. I love when an atheist like Dawkins or Krauss has that shining moment of honesty and integrity. Mm-hmm. I love when the atheist, when they're sort of like in these private moments like this, and I know it's not a private moment because it's a video, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, he's not in a debate, mm-hmm. is what I'm saying. He's not having a conflict with a Christian at the moment. He's just telling his story. I love the honesty in these moments when they just tell the story. Because when they're in debate with a Christian, oftentimes, like Krauss on stage with a Christian or something like that, it's a whole different thing. Mm-hmm. They have to try to convince the audience that, you know, their position really gives you a ground for science. They have to convince the audience it really gives you a ground for logic and beauty and truth and goodness and all the rest. But when you get these moments where they're just being atheists, mm-hmm. and they're just letting you know what they believe, you get the honesty. We're accidents in the universe. The future is miserable. You get Dawkins saying we evolved from bacteria, you know, to apes, to us. There is the honest atheist position. Mm. Now, what I'm asking the atheist in front of me to do is, as he engages with me, I'm asking you to be a good atheist.
Yeah.
Be a good one. Because, and I want to say this, I think honestly, and this, I don't know if this makes you sound bad, but I know my own heart, my own sinfulness. If I was an atheist, I would be a good atheist. No, I mean that seriously. I don't mean that offensive to my atheist friends, and I've got lots of atheist friends. I mean, honestly, I think I'd be a better atheist than most of the atheists that I know. Because mm-hmm. I would not, knowing my own heart, my own sinfulness, and also my own hatred of inconsistency, I think that I would despise in myself an inconsistency with myself to believe the things that atheists are supposed to believe and to be inconsistent with it in daily life, I would go all the way with it. I really would.
Mm-hmm. You'd eat your neighbor?
Well, you know, the thing is that what I'm saying, yeah, you know, there wouldn't be any reason ultimately, right, any ought above me not to.
Right.
But what I mean is what I'm looking for is the atheist that's consistent. I really want that atheist.
Yeah.
Now, they have bright and shining moments of consistency where they try to be consistent, which is really inconsistent if you think about it. But I want the atheist that's consistent. And I enjoy it when I see it. I obviously hate the depravity. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, I hate the sadness that comes with the darkness, yeah, of atheism. But I love the honesty. Like, for example, here's a great example. Will Provine. Another clip we played before, but I think it's important. Will Provine is the evolutionary professor from Cornell. What's up, Andy, from Cornell? That's an office quote, by the way. This is Will Provine, evolutionist from Cornell. And this is him being honest with evolution. I just love it. This is a guy that I respect. He has integrity. And I like what he says about where this leads. This is Will Provine, Cornell. Listen closely.
No gods, no life after death, no ultimate foundation for ethics, no ultimate meaning in life, and no human free will are all deeply connected to an evolutionary perspective. You're here today and you're gone tomorrow, and that's all there is to it.
Dr. Will Provine, professor of the history of biology at Cornell University, gave us another disturbing glimpse into where Darwinism can lead.
Oh, I was a Christian, but I never heard anything about evolution because it was illegal to teach it in Tennessee.
Dr. Provine's first biology professor changed all that.
He started talking about evolution as if it had no design in it whatsoever. And I came up to him and I said, "You've left out the most important part." And he said, "If you feel the same way at the end of one quarter, I want you to stand up in front of the students in this class and tell them this deep lack in evolution." And I read that book so carefully, and I could find no sign of there being any design whatsoever in evolution. And I immediately began to doubt the existence of the deity. But it starts by giving up an active deity. Then it gives up the hope that there's any life after death. When you give those two up, the rest of it follows fairly easily. You give up the hope that there's an imminent morality. And finally, there's no human free will. If you believe in evolution, you can't hope for there being any free will. There's no hope whatsoever of there being any deep meaning in human life. We live, we die, and we're gone. We're absolutely gone when we die.
Boom. Love it.
Yeah.
Sad and depressing for the atheist. Yeah. But I love a man with integrity like Will Provine. He's an atheist with integrity. And look where he goes. And you guys can dialogue with me through this for a second. This is Provine. History of biology, is that what he said? Of evolutionary biology at Cornell?
I think
what he said his position officially is. So here's the first thing he says, you give up first the active deity, that there's an active God, right? And he says, and that shortly followed by there being any possibility of life after death. And he says that leads to no immanent morality. Now, what does that mean? No immanent morality. There's no real morality. There's no active, real, ultimate morality. And so what Will Provine's telling you is, honestly, it's an illusion. The whole issue of morality, it's an illusion. There's no immanent morality. There's no ought at all. You live, you die, and you're gone. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely gone when you die. This is a man, he's being honest. He just has integrity here. He's just saying, this is where we're at. If there's evolution, there's no God, and no life after death, and there's no immanent morality, there's no free will. What's he mean by no free will? Not in the Arminian Calvinist debate sense of free will. He means that there's no free will in the sense that if you are the byproduct of an evolutionary mm-hmm. process, then what he's saying is, and this is what many evolutionists have debates with each other over, is that your thoughts, your actions are just the byproduct of the chemical processes going on in your brain. In other words, you can't help but do and think what you are because right. you're just the You're the inaction of the cosmos. You're just a byproduct of your chemical processes. That's what he means by no free will, no human free will, and no ultimate meaning in life.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yep.
So, I mean, yeah.
Sorry, I don't know if you continue.
No, go ahead. Fill in here. Well, this is atheism 100 proof, right? And I'm saying full strength atheism. This is what it is. And this is the atheist that I'm looking for. I want to sit down and have a drink with the atheist who has the kind of integrity as a Will Provine, who will just say it like it is. Mm-hmm. I obviously, as a Christian, I know he's going to be inconsistent in numerous places in his life because there's a suppression of truth going on.
Right.
But I want to talk to the atheist who does not go barking mad at verses in the Bible, because guess what? There's no imminent morality. There's no ultimate meaning in life. We live, we die, and we're gone. We're absolutely gone, we die. I want that atheist. Now, they're not going to ultimately find that atheist, I don't believe, because they're in the image of God, and it's too hard to push down. You can't help living the way that God created you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just going to say that I thought the quote from Krauss shows how in atheism that ultimately morality is completely arbitrary, or things like goodness, beauty, truth, they're all completely arbitrary, because here he shows it and proves it by his statement that we're an accident, you know, but there's goodness in that. It's like, well, how does that even work?
Yeah, no. And then we say, guys, that the atheist knows God. He's suppressing the truth of God. Not only, listen closely to my atheist friends, if you're listening now, listen closely. We don't just say that God says you're suppressing the truth and unrighteousness and that he's given the knowledge of himself to every person who's ever lived. We don't just say that. We're saying that you're evidencing that claim at every moment of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Dawkins, and this is the example I use many times, the Dawkins will say there's no good, there's no evil, only blind and pitiless indifference, right?
Mm.
And then he will sign contracts with his book publisher,
mm-hmm.
right? Making promises, expecting them to keep the promise, right? That they're going to pay him royalties for his books that he sells,
right?
And he anticipates they will. And if they don't, Dawkins doesn't fall back on there's no good, there's no evil, only blind and pitiless indifference, there's no ultimate, you know, ultimate objective morality. He'll say, no, I'm suing you because you broke a promise. He doesn't live consistently with it. Now, here's Dawkins being consistent with Justin Brierley from the Unbelievable Radio program on the issue of rape. And you need to hear Dawkins in this discussion being consistent.
When you make a value judgment, don't you immediately step yourself outside of this evolutionary process and say there is the reason this is good is because it's good, and you don't have any way to stand on that statement?
But my value judgment itself could come from my evolutionary past, and I suppose.
So therefore it's just as random in a sense as any product of evolution.
Well, you could say that, but it doesn't in any case, nothing about it makes it more probable that there is anything supernatural.
Okay, but ultimately your belief that rape is wrong is as arbitrary as the fact that we've evolved five fingers rather than six. I mean,
you could say that. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, I appreciate those moments. I think it's disturbing.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's disturbing. The Bible puts such a value on women, and this is the truth, and atheist attempts to the contrary, obviously, or, you know, a sign, nonetheless, at least. The Bible so values women that it says that if you rape, you deserve the death penalty. That's just how it goes. And so here you have atheism displaying the arbitrary nature of the claim that rape mm-hmm. is wrong by saying, well, yeah, it is just as arbitrary as the fact that I've evolved with five fingers rather than six. You know, it's just in atheism a personal preference, ultimately, that we don't want rape as a good thing. But that doesn't really argue with the rapist who wants to do it. Your personal preference doesn't right. have any authority over him. So be right back, guys. ApologiaRadio.com. Stay with us, guys. More to do and to say on the atheism and feminism discussion. Be right back. ApologiaRadio.com.
How many books do you know of that address topics of education and welfare, local government, state government, taxation, money and banking, free markets, courts, war and the military, and the executive power? How many books do you know? actually talk about these topics from a biblical perspective and set forth all of the issues, ideas, the history, and the hurdles, and the blueprints for the way forward. Hi, I'm Joel McDermott with AmericanVision.org. In Restoring America One County at a Time, I cover all these topics and more, showing you how America was once free, how those freedoms were lost, and giving you an uncompromising biblical approach to get those freedoms back. I focus on practical steps, local solutions, personal sacrifices, and it has a multi-generational vision. So don't just sit around talking about restoring America. Actually do something. And you can start by getting my book, Restoring America One County at a Time, at AmericanVision.org.
This is Jeff Durbin with Apologia Radio. Get us at ApologiaRadio.com. The profanation of marriage is gaining legs within our culture with the same-sex marriage debate. This is, church, a gospel issue. We have to be salt. We must be light on this issue of same-sex marriage.
This is Joy Temby with Apologia Radio. I urge you guys to pray for the homosexual community, then log on to realharmony.org to equip yourselves with the resources we've provided.
This is the Ministry Bear. Here's the issue. The same-sex attracted community has a symbol that's universally recognized. It's an equal sign. You see it everywhere. Until now, the Christian community has not had a symbol that represents true, harmonious, biblical marriage. Go to realharmony.org and buy a sticker. They're $3 a piece. Get your church to buy them by the truckloads. Help us redeem the culture. And let me reiterate, this is not a political issue only. This is a gospel issue. realharmony.org.
Dig on that. Apologia Radio, guys. Let's go a little quicker here. And let's get right into the rest, a little longer segment right now, guys. Welcome back. Talking about atheism and feminism. Sort of been trying to lay down a foundation of, let's talk about what we really believe about people, about origins, about life, morality. And I was just commenting how much I appreciate guys like Will Provine, Lawrence Krauss, Richard Dawkins being honest in discussion about where their beliefs really lead to. And so I love these shining moments. This is a great example. We had a long time back, we had atheist Brett Strong on, a fiery atheist guy. We had him on the radio program. And the issue of rape also came up, and morality came up with Brett. And I appreciated this moment. It was very, very good of Brett to just be honest and have integrity in this moment. So I do appreciate what he said here. This is the discussion he and I had.
The reason why we have morality, because we're not on the same page on most things.
Okay, Brett, are we on the same page? Is it wrong to rape a woman?
Yes, and tell us
who says
that it's wrong.
Who
absolutely
says?
You're violating another individual.
Okay, ready? Brett, yes. your intelligence tells you that it is wrong, but the rapist's intelligence tells him that he wants to do it and it's a good moral thing to do. So
who's
right? You or him?
See, this is the point, that since we're individuals, it ultimately comes down to each individual. You know,
should the rapist go to jail?
Hang on one second. Okay. I'll give you a second to speak. Slavery, right? Let's take it back to your Christendom. Slave masters raped the women. They raped the girls. In their minds, they were morally correct. They were morally right, right? But they were able to get away with it because they had the might. Now the mic has switched up and saying, if you rape a woman in America, you will be put in prison.
So it's not really wrong. So Brett,
to Mike, it's always been that way, Jeff Durbin.
Brett,
it'll always be that way.
You gotta,
and you know it because Christendom shows it in the black slavery.
Brett, if you don't let me get a word in, we're just going to have to take you off the show. This has to be a dialogue, Brett. When you bring up an issue, I want to make sure we get a chance to touch that. So what you're saying is that the society, first you said it was your own intelligence that determines the norm, and then you said the society determines the norm. So which is it? Is it personal preference or is it societal conventions? Which is it? Because those are two different things.
It's a personal preference. But when you get the majority of people agreeing upon a certain thing, then that becomes the law of the day.
So what you're saying then, I'm trying to reason through what you're saying in a coherent way. First, you said it was personal preference. Then you said it was societal convention. So if it's societal convention, then that means you're saying that society determines what is good or bad, what's evil or not evil. And so if that's the case, then given that, it's not really wrong to rape a person, is it?
If the society one lives in allows it, then you can do it. That's just the way it is.
Thank you very much. So your atheism has led you to a worldview where rape is not really wrong, theft is not really wrong. There are no real objective standards of good or evil. You really are really actually displaying now the ultimate outcome of atheism, that it leads to no foundation, coherent, cogent foundation for morality, because it's just what someone wants to do. For example, given your atheism, what you've just given me, I have no moral complaint against Hitler. Hitler had the might to do what he did. The German people went along with him. They thought the Jews were non-persons. They look like people. They're not people. They're Jews. And based on that, he was fine. Correct?
Oh, yeah. In his society, he was fine. Absolutely.
Right. So that's good.
What he did.
So there you go. Okay. So there's another one of those bright and shining, honest atheist moments. Now, if you want to say, well, that's Brett Strong, he's not intelligent, he doesn't know how to argue, you know, sort of a thing, I just think it's just honest. He's just being an atheist. Yeah. But let's get Dan Barker on the same sort of discussion. Dan Barker was on with Luke and Cy Ten Brugge, Kate and I, on an old episode of Redemption Radio. Here's Dan Barker, same subject. Oops, my bad. Hold up. I'm sorry. Here we go.
When we see something evil happen in front of us, a man hurt a woman or something like that, I would look at that and I would say, well, God is love. Love does no harm to its neighbor. And you have two people in front of me who are valuable and they have dignity. And this is wrong because it's a lack of love and it does no wrong to its neighbor. I have a basis there. But when I have your foundations, I look at that, Dan, and this, you have a minute to respond to this. And I say, well, if that's a cosmic ant or stardust or it's an ape, what's really wrong with that?
Well, you and I have the same basis then. You and I are both basing our moral principles on actual harm. The harm that's being done is not some dictator's ego was offended because we didn't worship him
actually,
on the right
I wasn't,
day
actually,
of the week.
I wasn't saying
it's
that.
Actual
actually,
harm in the real world to real human beings. And by nature, we are biological organisms that recoil from harm, who do not flourish, who do not live well when there is an unnecessary harm in the world. So the avoidance of harm is the same principle that you and I are both appealing to. You use a God to justify it. Those of us who don't believe in God use humanistic principles.
Well, I would say what's the problem with stardust bumping into stardust?
In the cosmic picture, no, there's no problem. In the cosmic picture, it won't matter.
Okay,
but
great.
There
you go. So there's Dan Barker arguing the same essential point. Mm-hmm. Now, I got to say this is really important to say. So the atheist will say, no, but we do have an objective standard, and that's nervous systems. It hurts somebody else. So I got to tell you that that's not an objective standard. I wish the atheist would finally grasp that, because that's you stating what you would like to do or not do to the nervous system. Do you see that? It's not objective. It's still your own interpretation as to whether or not doing something that affects somebody's nervous system in a negative way is a bad thing. Mm-hmm. You see, what have you already done there? You've assumed that pain is wrong. Wouldn't you agree that there are lots of people who like to inflict pain? Now, they've evolved along the same evolutionary chain as you in a universe that doesn't care, and they happen to like to inflict pain. Now, you're choosing, as an atheist, I don't like to give unnecessary harm to other living creatures. But you'll notice you've already been arbitrary, because what are you being arbitrary with? Human beings. Mm-hmm. You will be harmful to other living creatures, other products of evolutionary processes, like cows, chickens, salad. You know what I'm saying? Fruit. You know what I'm saying? You're still harming living things that grew up in an evolutionary process in a universe that doesn't care. You've arbitrarily decided humans should get treated well. Well, who says we have to listen to you? That's your preference. And if you say, well, society's determined it. So, okay, so again, we're back to the same problem. If society determines what the norm is, then is Hitler really wrong? Because in his society, everyone went along with him. He got a majority vote. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, Hitler was put into power by democratic vote. Don't ever forget that. Don't ever forget that. It's very important. But these are important things to discuss when we talk about the issue of atheism. Because, listen, it's not wrong for the Christian to point out to the atheist that you have no ultimate foundation for ethics. Right. You have mere preferences. The Christian has an ultimate foundation. Watch this. Brett Strong says, let's talk about slavery in your Christendom and the slave owners raping the woman, identifying somehow Christendom with the raping of slave women. Wow.
Yeah.
First of all, because I have to say this, as a Christian, I have a standard to stand on, the word of God, that's objective outside of me and true whether or not I like it or believe it, that I can point to say, well, God says that anybody who rapes somebody deserves the death penalty. And guess what else? Guess what the Christians were arguing during the time of the Civil War who were opposed to slavery? They believed they had inherited a moral mess. Yeah. That they despised. There were more anti-slave societies, I believe it was in the 1830s, than there were in the South and there were in the North. And the argument was, not only is slavery immoral and been abolished in every Christian nation peacefully, but anybody that's engaged in the capture of and kidnapping of a slave deserves the, ready, death penalty. Yeah. Why? Because the Word of God says death penalty for kidnapping and enslaving. So it's an amazing thing, right, when someone brings this up, like raping a slave. It's like, well, Christians had a basis to actually say that it deserves the death penalty. Christians, it was the Christian worldview, let's not forget. It was the Christian worldview that ultimately did away with slavery. Why? Because what was the major argument behind opposing slavery? Image of God. Image of God created equal under our what? Creator. Atheism did not do away with slavery. No. Let's be honest. Atheism didn't abolish slavery. Atheism believes that we're all the products of an evolutionary process that doesn't
Atheism
care.
Atheism believes that people from Africa are different species. And maybe even less evolved in many instances.
I mean, you have every reason in an evolutionary process to be able to say, well, we're the fittest, and we don't believe that you personally fit in our model.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, many people make the argument that Mein Kampf and Hitler's work there, he's standing on evolutionary principles. Mm-hmm. You know, you might want to disagree with that as an atheist. Fine, your argument is with Hitler. It's not with me as a Christian. You argue with his appeal to the evolutionary process in executing, you know, people who are not so fit. Mm-hmm. Your argument's not with the Christian at that point. You argue with Hitler at that point. But I think it's important, and I'm not just bringing up the Hitler argument, it's just that these are valid discussions to have. You've got to argue with the atheistic secular societies. You've got to argue with Mao. You've got to argue with Pol Pot. You've got to argue with Stalin. You've got to argue with societies that have tried atheism. You got to argue with them, right? You got to argue with the piles of bodies that atheism has encouraged these societies to just do away with. You've got to argue with the piles of body of Stalin. Now, when you talk about Christianity in history, when Christians, professing Christians, have done evil things in history, you can think about the Spanish Inquisition. I have a right as a Christian to complain about that.
Yeah.
I have a right as a Christian to condemn it. But if you compare the body count between atheistic regimes and failures of Christians in histories, it isn't even a close race. It is miles and miles and miles. And atheists, listen, the societies you've developed have beat us in the murder of people by the metric ton. But as a Christian, I get to complain.
Yeah.
Because I have the Word of God as a standard. You see? You don't.
Yeah. Well, even B. Strong's argument against, you know, slavery, but then he goes on to say, well, if the society determines it's okay, so what's his issue? If the society back then determined that slavery was okay, there's no issue.
That's a good point.
Yeah, we can't go, like, try to indict past societies for their decisions because at the time it was okay.
That was their decision.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he agreed with that, by the way. He agreed with that with Hitler. Did you catch that?
Mm-hmm.
He said when Hitler wanted to do it, it's fine. That's society. They went along with him. He had the mic. Yeah. Good to go. Well, guess what? So did the people in America that were engaged in the wicked slavery.
Right.
So no complaints. You see the inconsistencies? Great point, Pastor Luke.
That's how I do, baby boo.
I'll be right back, guys. Now we're going to connect a little bit more, guys, to the details of the feminism discussion. Be right back.
Apology Radio will be right back.
Well, sincere,
right, y'all. I'm back. ApologiaRadio.com. Get us there. Like us on Facebook, guys. If you haven't gone to Facebook yet, like the page. Join the discussion. We try to offer you guys a lot of free resources and helps and all the rest. So go there, check it out, join the discussion, and get part to be a part of the community. Back right now, talking again about atheism and feminism. Wanted to play this last clip. Forgot about this, guys. I've tried to play Dawkins, Krauss, respected men, Dan Barker, even atheists trying to be consistent like Brett Strong. And, you know, we talk about Will Provine just being consistent. There's no imminent morality. But does this really work out in anybody's mind that these are the logical implications, right? Because we can say it in theory that, look, if you stand on that, this is where you would ultimately have to go. Like, as a Christian, I can say, okay, listen, it is absolutely objectively true and with certainty that you should love your neighbor and not eat your neighbor. Now, the atheist can't also say that. They can say preference-wise, I say it's not good, it's a nervous system that's hurting, it's not good to do that. But ultimately, there's not really an ultimate certainty there that it's love your neighbor, not eat your neighbor. They may have preference and say, well, that's not good for society, but then again, what's the assumption there? The society is should flourish. Why not destruction? Why not kerosene the whole anthill is the question, right? It's too many gimmies. The atheist wants a gimme all the time because he's in the image of God. He can't help being that in God's world. But listen, here's Jeffrey Dahmer. Yes, it's important to discuss. Jeffrey Dahmer, in an interview while he's in prison, after he was caught, Jeffrey Dahmer, you guys remember, was the man that was the man guilty of killing people and eating them. And this is him in prison discussing, I think, it is something that's worthy of listening to.
Your dad has wondered about all kinds of things, from the medication that your mom was on during her pregnancy to the fact that you were exposed to violent arguments in the home from an early age and continuing, to the possibility that he might have passed on some genetic propensity for obsession or violent behavior. Does any of that ring true to you?
I can see why he'd wonder about those things, but as far as I'm concerned, they're all excuses, because I didn't feel accountable to anybody. I didn't feel that I had to face what I had done ever. And so there comes a point where a person has to be accountable for what he's done. Can't go around making excuses, blaming other people or other things. So I alone am the one who's responsible for what's happened.
Let me ask, when did you first feel that everyone is accountable for their actions?
Well, thanks to you for sending that creation science material. Because I always believe the lie that evolution is truth, the theory of evolution is truth, that we all just came from the slime, and when we died, you know, that was it. There was nothing. So the whole theory cheapens life, and started reading books about how that show how evolution is just a complete lie. There's no basis in science to uphold it, and I've since come to believe that that the Lord Jesus Christ is the true creator of the heavens and the earth. It just didn't just happen, and I have accepted Him as my Lord and Savior, and I believe that I, as well as everyone else, will be accountable to Him.
All right, so here's what's not being said right now by me. I'm not saying that all atheists become Jeffrey Dahmers. Mm-hmm. Okay, you understand that? I'm not saying that, so I hope you don't take it that way. Very important for clarity here. What I am pointing to is this. I'm pointing to the fact that what you believe matters. And here you have a man, Jeffrey Dahmer, who most of us recognize as doing some unbelievably despicable, heinous things in the world, and here's, I think, him being honest. I mean, he's accepting responsibility for what he did. I appreciated that. But here's him connecting his belief about the worth of life and humanity to what he believed about his origins, that if we've come from the slime, then it cheapens life and there's no judgment and all. There's no reason, really. Now, the atheist doesn't want to live in a world like that. The atheist doesn't want to say,
right,
we're just the byproducts of an evolutionary process that didn't have us in mind. We're just, you know, the descendants of bacteria. And so let's live consistently with that. Atheists don't want to do that. Why? Because they're in the image of God. Mm. But they also recognize in the image of God, in the value that's really there, what kind of destructive nature that would bring into the world, into people's thinking. But here's the deal. Watch this. There are atheists who just go consistent with it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
They just go consistent with it, and they say this is just the nature of the case. A couple examples here. Alex Rosenberg, one source of meaning on which many people have relied is the intrinsic value, in particular, the moral value of human life. People have also sought moral rules, codes, principles, which are supposed to distinguish us from merely biological critters whose lives lack as much meaning as value as ours. Scientism must reject all of these straws that people have grasped, and it's not hard to show why. Science has to be nihilistic about ethics and morality. Carl Sagan, the universe seems neither benign nor hostile, merely indifferent. Carl Sagan, we're all butterflies who flutter for a day and think it is forever. I love this quote from Darwin, actually. Darwin, powerful. He says, "But then with me, the horrid doubt always arises whether the convictions of man's mind, which has been developed from the mind of the lower animals, are of any value or at all trustworthy. Would anyone trust in the convictions of a monkey's mind, mm-hmm. if there are any convictions in such a mind?" As Charles Darwin, the autobiography of Charles Darwin, Cambridge, UK, Icon Books, 2003, page 153. Very important. I think it's important. Those are honest moments.
Maybe not a monkey, but a bonobo.
A bonobo. I'd love to say that. It's fun to say. It really is. So, okay. Now,
it really is.
It really is. Bonobo. comments before we leap into the discussion real quick about the atheist.
I was just curious who did that interview with Dahmer. I hadn't heard that.
Oh, I just took it off my thing there. I don't know.
Jerk.
If you look it up, the full, and he does say, by the way, a lot more about that whole discussion on evolution. He does say more. So look it up online. Jeffrey Dahmer and evolution, I think, is what you want to look up, and you'll find it on there. Okay. So in the past, we have had a guy that I've taken out to lunch. You guys know that I've talked about him before. I've taken him out to lunch. Love this guy. Care about him. And he's been on the show with us before. When he initially came on Apologia Radio, you'll remember him as William Costigan. Am I saying that right? Is it Costigan?
I really don't know.
William Costigan is how he came on. He did a debate with Vocab under that name. After interacting with us a few times and us responding and him putting up YouTube videos, he actually changed his identity, erased the old past of him being called that, and now goes by a new name. And is part of a radio program called Unbelievers Radio. And he has written some stuff in the past. The last thing he wrote, we responded to. He actually, post writing it, made some corrections along the way as he was corrected, and my problem was not identifying those corrections that he made. So I'm just giving you a little bit of a history here, guys. Important to know. We typically would just ignore the stuff coming from this guy just because of his past of, you know, inconsistency and just, I think, just not being cautious or careful. But this was good. So this was really good. He tagged, actually, Joy, Luke, and I, and I usually don't pay much attention just because of, again, the past. But we're going to talk about an article that he wrote about our last episode where he says Apologia Radio cherry picks the Bible for feminism. You guys ready for this?
Yes, sir.
Here we go, guys. Let's get into it. Be right back. ApologiaRadio.com.
Apologia Radio will be right back.
What's up? Welcome back, y'all. ApologiaRadio.com. Talking about atheism and feminism. Let's jump right into it. The article states, I'll just read portions of it. Do our best to get through as much as we can today. Apologia Radio's November 1st show, Potty Mouth Princesses and Godly Troublemakers, was a response to the recent FCKH8 video, Flick Hate video, in support of feminism. The video featured several little girls dressed as princesses, dropping F-bombs to draw attention to gender injustice and inequality. Joy, Jeff, and Luke agreed with the statistics in the video and agreed that sexism and violence against women is wrong. Quick point, did we just carte blanche agree with the statistics in the video, or did we have a whole five-minute discussion, a whole entire five-minute discussion on being cautious with statistics and not necessarily believing everything they say?
This is why we've not dialogued much with this person, because of consistently... unhonest on honest, dishonest responses.
Yes.
I can't talk right now.
Yeah, it's okay.
I'm going to give it over to John.
I respect
you. I'm so upset. I'm so upset right now that I can't even get words out of my mouth.
It was just funny. I just started reading the article and I immediately thought, this is why we've limited, like, our response time to this guy.
Yeah.
Not that I don't know. I don't know him. Honestly, I don't have anything against him personally. I'm not even mad. This is exactly what I expected.
Yes.
But it's just, it made me laugh.
It's
just
a consistent
pattern. Like,
yeah.
I was like, that's just not true. Yeah. The very first sentence of your article is not true.
Yeah. And that's exactly the point. When we've had to deal with this man in the past, these are the sorts of things we're challenged with, is inconsistency, dishonest relaying of the facts, and also even little moments like that. Now, it's not a huge deal in the article, but just the point is, your first line is that Jeff, Luke, and Joy agreed to the statistics in the video. Did we not have an entire discussion?
I believe we did.
An entire discussion. Then I even brought up an issue of the Puritans and how people malign the Puritans and they bring up issues, but they shift the whole discussion in a way that works best for them. Yeah. And what did we forget that was in the show?
Maybe.
Did we forget that was in the show, or are we just going to say it was something different? That is, women in America are paid 23% less than men for the same work. Women who graduate from college with straight A's still get paid the same as men who graduate with C's. And one out of every five women in America are sexually assaulted or raped by a man. But Jeff went on to argue that the Bible supports equality for women. He cherry-picked verses to support his position. And he quotes me, "If you want equality for women, if you want women to be seen as valuable as having the same dignity and worth as a man, then you have to adopt the biblical worldview." I stand by that, by the way. God says in Genesis, "In the image of God, he created them, male and female." The biblical gospel gives you the breakdown of the walls of separation between people. There's neither male nor female, slave nor free, Jew nor Greek. We're all one in Christ Jesus Christ. So what I would say to the feminists is, if you really want equality and be seen as equal and deserving of all the same respect and worth and wage as a man, you need the biblical worldview. And he says, cherry picking galore! Exclamation point. Now, by the way, I'm going to say this very important thing. Ready? It is against everything that I believe based on scripture to cherry pick the Bible.
Right.
Guess what? We find that allegation of cherry picking the Bible immoral.
Mm-hmm.
Not your allegation to me. I think it's dishonest.
Mm.
But I find the whole issue of cherry picking the Bible to be an immoral issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's twisting the scriptures. The word of God has to be handled in a way with respect and care and concern.
Yeah.
And it's a condemning thing to twist the scriptures. Yeah. By the way, in the same episode, did we not end the episode the last 5 minutes talking about biblical hermeneutics?
Mm-hmm.
Did we not discuss the issue of looking at audience, context, cultural background, syntax, grammar, and all the rest? Did we not have that discussion?
I believe we did.
We have to do that when we approach the Bible, and we are not allowed to pull the Bible out of context.
Yeah.
Apparently.
And I would say to him, why do you care?
And again, please. And you were saying, please continue.
Yeah.
When in Rome. Okay. Now, this is another important thing, right? Because as we get into the discussion, here is a man who believes that he is a descendant of fish in a universe that does not care. Awfully concerned about what other apes are teaching.
Yep.
Can we just talk about that? We let that room and get in the room and hang out. Can we remember our foundations here? Is that we're the ones with a coherent picture of women and men as valuable image bearers of God, and you're the one that believes that women ultimately came from pond scum? Is that not allowed to talk about that in here, or is that against the rules? Because, see, that is consistent with atheism.
Mm-hmm.
That is what your beliefs are. You disagree, then I'd like you to argue with Dawkins, not with me. Now, if you accept that, then here's the question. What's the big fuss? What's the big to-do about this discussion? Be right back, guys, talking more. We're going to get into some of these verses here from Joy in just a moment. ApologiaRadio.com. Stay with us. Share this episode. Apologiaradio.com.
Jeff Joy and the Bear. And my boys. What's up, my boys? Sage and Turtle. All right, y'all, here we go. So let's get into last segment. A couple of different verses that he brought up. He says, cherry picking galore.
Was that a title for this segment of his article?
What?
Cherry picking galore.
Cherry picking galore.
He accused us of cherry picking, but then the rest of his article is just verses taken out of context.
Joy, I'm so glad you saw that. It seems that being an atheist dramatically decreases your ability to read the Bible. And I don't know if...
I guess it's fine if you want to cherry pick, but don't accuse us of cherry picking.
No.
And then you do it to bolster your opinion about the Bible and us cherry picking.
Yeah.
You can't cherry pick to show that someone else is... cherry picking.
I believe that exactly. I believe that if you are a Christian and cherry pick God's word and twist it, you have to answer for that. Mm-hmm. How's that?
Yeah.
I believe it's a moral issue. It's a moral issue to do that.
Now, all this talking of cherry pick is making me hungry.
It is. All right, let's do a quick one. Cherry picking galore. Cherry picking galore, as Jeff conveniently left out all the sexist stuff in the Bible. First, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. If the Bible maligns descendants of bacteria, let's be honest, it doesn't matter. But for me, it does. That's why I get bothered as a Christian. Look at this. I go, sexist stuff in the Bible. I go, what? What? Why? Because that's not the biblical position. So here we go. Ready? He quotes 1 Corinthians 11:8-9. For the first man didn't come from a woman, but the first woman came from a man. And the man was not created for woman's benefit, but woman was made for man. Understand something. My friends who are atheists, and particularly the gentleman who wrote this article, understand something. difference in function does not mean inferiority in nature. Very important for you to grab that. Difference in function or role does not mean inferiority in nature. Grab hold of that, understand that, because as Christians, when we say male and female, he created them in the image of God, he created them. They are equal in value and dignity and substance. It does not mean, however, that men and women do not have different roles and functions ordained by God that are harmonious. But guess what? One's not more important than the other. It's just a different role. And it does not imply inferiority in nature. So if God creates man first in his image and then the woman in a harmonious role with the man, they are both image of God. Different roles, different functions does not imply inferiority in nature. It does not.
Yeah. Well, even when you go further in the chapter 2 of Genesis, why did God create the woman? Because the man needed her. He needed to help her. So the man was incomplete without the woman.
Yeah, very much so.
So if you ask me, that puts a higher need and desire for the woman and makes her more desirable than the man even, because the man needed help.
Well, something else needs to be said here. Proverbs 31 talks about the woman, right? And you want to get to that passage, or I'll grab it real fast here. Proverbs 31, I'm going to read the passage. Proverbs 31 says something about women that you will never find the Bible saying about men, period. Mm. And it says that an excellent wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels. Now, you know what it doesn't say about a husband anywhere in the Bible? An excellent husband, who can find? He's far more precious than jewels. You have the woman elevated to a place of dignity and respect in the Bible that you cannot get with atheism.
Right.
In atheism, women are the byproducts of the evolutionary process that didn't have in mind. The universe doesn't care. They are descendants of fish. Don't ever forget it. We don't believe that nonsense and that despicable view of women. I despise women being seen as descendants of bacteria. Hmm. I like them apples, Mr. Atheist. I think that's disturbing. Now, again, next passage here, he quotes, by the way, he got the reference wrong. Might want to correct this, as you did your last article. You quoted Ephesians 6, 22-24. It's actually Ephesians 5.
Yep.
But if you go to Ephesians 5, he quotes this: your wives will submit to your husbands as you do the Lord, to the Lord. For a husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church. As the church submits to Christ, so you wives must submit to your husbands in everything. Isn't it interesting that he conveniently quotes just a portion.
Yeah.
Just a portion. Let's look at the passage. You really should check the passage out before you go cherry picking the passage. Because interestingly, in 5:21, watch, one verse before 22, which is what he quoted, one verse. It's not like he can go, I missed it.
Yeah.
I was in a whole nother thing. It's right above it. It says, ready? Submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ. Mm-hmm. Submitting to one another, mutual submission out of reverence for Christ. And then now explanation of roles. Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and he himself is its Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands. Watch this. Oh, we always leave out the next part. Are you ready? Husbands, love your wives as Christ loves the church and gave himself up for her. Does the Bible anywhere give the woman the responsibility to love their husband as Christ loves the church and died for her?
Nope.
Amazingly. Wait, which role is tougher here? What's the command of men? Wives, submit to your husbands. Okay, we submit to your husbands. Husbands, love your wives like Jesus loves the church. Mm. How did Jesus love the church?
He died.
Superficially.
Sacrificially.
Oh, I thought it was superficially. Sacrificially. Are you kidding me? How much elevated is the woman in this passage? You love that woman like Jesus loved his church, and you die for her if necessary. Wait a minute. When I looked at this, I go, that looks like women are just being put under the foot of the man. Submit to your husbands? How dare you have a different role for a woman than a man? Oh, wait a minute. The woman is far more precious than jewels, and husbands, you die for your wives and you love them. And women, respect your husbands and submit to your husbands as the church submits to Christ. You see, here's the point. You understand something. The Bible has harmonious relationships between human beings. Not just marriage, but also fathers with children. Did you get that? There's also, guess what? Did you know the Bible also talks about proper roles with children and fathers with children, and that there's responsibilities there for harmony and relationship? You know what? Yeah, there's also roles with children and parents. That's also in your Bible. Difference in role or function does not mean inferiority in nature. And it's amazing that this man cherry-picked a verse that absolutely contradicts the point he was trying to make.
Yeah.
Just above it and just below it.
Yeah.
Let's call that the sandwiched version of contradiction, where you just pulled out the meat and you forgot the two stacks of bread right above and below. Basic mistake, though, for an atheist to make. We can forgive it. Next point. Let's see. Ephesians 2. Okay. 1 Timothy 2, 11 through 14. A woman must learn in silence and with full submission. I do not permit a woman to teach or to assume authority over a man. She must be quiet. 1 Timothy 2. I just want to encourage everyone to go read the passage. It is about church function. Women in the church are not to take the authoritative teaching position. It's just a role over a man. That's what's supposed to take place in God's house of worship. That's what God says. If you disagree with it, you are disagreeing not with an issue of nature and value, but just of role, right? But women have giftings and roles and all the rest in the church of God and participate equally in the mission of the kingdom of God.
Yep.
No question. Men are not above women in value and dignity and worth, and women not above men in value and dignity and worth. We do have different roles and functions. Christians acknowledge this. We have no problem with that. It does not mean inferiority in nature. And by the way, watch this. In the midst of this whole discussion, guess what? Guess who gets to have concern for value and dignity for women?
Me. A Christian.
I do. I get to care. You know why? Because I don't believe that they're descendants of bacteria. You do. Now let's continue on. This was awesome. This was so awesome, and it's so important to get this. The Old Testament is rife with sexism, gender equality, inequality, and violence against women. You know what it quotes? Leviticus 27. Leviticus 27. I want to say this to my atheist friend. Did you even read?
Probably not.
Did you even read the passage before you quoted it? So here's what he quotes from Leviticus 27, 3 through 7. The value of a male between the ages of 20 and 60 is valued at 50 pieces of silver. A woman of that age is valued at 30 pieces of silver. A boy between 5 and 20 is valued at 20 pieces of silver. A girl of that age is valued at 10 pieces of silver. It's amazing. It's just chunk pulled out of the Bible, and you go, value? Pieces of silver? Man? Woman? Man, the Bible is so sexist.
Yeah.
Wow. Except if you actually read the passage and you read the book that it came from, you would recognize something very important. And this is one of those important things. Let me teach you as an atheist something. The next time you need to think about cultural context, background, history, author, audience, syntax, grammar, and current context, who spoke, the unit. Moses wrote the first five books of the Bible. Jesus confirmed that. That's what the Jews believed, Christians believed. It's a unit. So you need to know that Deuteronomy, part of the Pentateuch, the first five books, written by Moses also, by the way, Deuteronomy 23, watch this, verse 21. If you make a vow to the Lord, your God, you shall not delay fulfilling it, for the Lord your God will surely require it of you, and you will be guilty of sin. But if you refrain from vowing, you will not be guilty of sin. You shall be careful to do what has passed your lips, for you have voluntarily vowed to the Lord your God what you have promised with your mouth. Guys, vows here are completely voluntary. But God says, be careful what passes from your mouth, because if you make that commitment and vow, you are obligated to actually do it now. But guess what the vows were? Absolutely voluntary. And when you move to the passage in Leviticus 27, do you know what that passage is about? It's about people who have made the vow, and guess what? This is now the penalty paid for the vow that passed from their lips that they now have to require. And you know what's awesome? In this thing here, this atheist is trying to demonstrate that men are more valued than women with 50 pieces of silver and the woman at 30. Do you know what that is? The penalty of not fulfilling the vow for whatever reason. These are the penalties applied to the not fulfilling the vow. You know what's amazing here? It's not about the man being valued at more.
Right.
It's about the man being penalized more for the vow he made not fulfilling. So guess what? The woman is penalized
less.
This passage says the exact opposite.
Right.
So what are you arguing here? You're really mad that the woman is penalized less than the man? You're really mad about that? You want women to be penalized a lot more? You want them to receive the heightened penalty? Mm. You see, there's a lot to be said here about the fact that the head tax for the man in that society is the head of the house. He had to pay a half a shekel a year. Temple stuff, big discussion to have. But the point is that may be factoring into this whole discussion with this, but it's amazing. The passage ripped absolutely out of context, and I would be willing to bet he'd never even read the context or the book. Hmm. Why? He's not concerned with understanding. He wants to cherry pick the Bible and rip it out of context. George, you got something you want to say here quickly? We got 2 minutes. I'd love to have your input as what's in your heart about the male-female relationship.
Well, I have in front of me here, it's called Recovering Biblical Manhood and Womanhood, compiled by Piper and Grudem. It probably would have, contextually speaking, would have been a little bit better to read this a few minutes ago. But there's a section that talks about male-female equality and male headship and talks about the differences. So there are a few distinctions that I just want to read, like some definitions that maybe would, you know, clear it up a little bit. Male-female equality is defined as man and woman are equal in the sense that they bear God's image equally. Male headship we would define as in the partnership of two spiritually equal human beings, man and woman, the man bears the primary responsibility to lead the partnership in a God-glorifying direction. Now, this next definition is one that I consider very important. It talks about the antithesis to male headship is male domination. By male domination, I mean the assertion of man's will over the woman's will, heedless of her spiritual equality, her rights, and her value. So let's not get male headship and male domination mixed up.
Very much so. And again, all these discussions are important discussions for Christians to have that are meaningful within a Christian worldview and framework. But guess what? Ultimately, I would say to the atheists critiquing our critique of feminism is this. Ready? So what? So what? Hi, this is Jeff Durbin with Apologia Radio. You can get us at apologiaradio.com. I'm also the pastor at Apologia Church in Tempe. You can get us at apologiachurch.com. www.thehomosexualcommunity.com. I want to invite you guys to join us for worship, the word, and fellowship on Sundays at 4 p.m. And that's Joy Temby.
Hey there. We are a family integrated church, so we invite you to bring your whole family to worship with us.
This is Luke Pearson, the ministry bearer, also discipleship pastor at Apologia Church. Like Jeff mentioned, we are now meeting at a new location and time, 4 p.m. on Sunday afternoons at Arizona Community Church. That's 9325 South Rural Road in Tempe. We're meeting in the Community Center, and that is between Warner and Ray off of Rural. Again, you can reach us on them internets at apologiachurch.com.
Delicious beards are encouraged but not required. Glory!